You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Broadcasting across the state of Wisconsin on the Civic Media Radio Network and around the world on the Civic Media app, this is the Dom Salvia Show. And now, here's your host, Dom Salvia.
And welcome to the Dom Salvia Show. Thank you so much for tuning in. You can be a part, 855-752-4842, 855-75-CIVIC. Got Jess P.S. working hard on the board. Jazzed as hell, reintroducing our pal, Harvey K., Professor Emeritus of Democracy at the University of Wisconsin, Green Bay. Happy, happy days. Harvey, welcome back.
It is a pleasure to be here as ever, believe me.
I always enjoy our time together, Harvey. And I know you didn't watch the big game last night, and you really didn't miss out a whole lot. So we don't have to go there. But where I
can,
do want to...
Can I say...
Yes, go ahead.
Can I say something about that game, okay? So I have a really, really close friend down in St. Louis. And I'm not... He's in Kansas City. He's a huge, very, very actively involved in sports stuff down there, and just a big, big fan, you can imagine, of the Kansas City Chiefs.
Yeah.
But I really, I'm not a fan of the Eagles, but I wanted them to win because it seems like the most significant players in that team are MAGA types, and their families are too. I don't know if Kelsey himself can say his girlfriend, she's no MAGA type to my knowledge.
Right? No, I wouldn't think okay. So.
But Mahomes' wife and his mother are blatantly MAGA. And I thought, I can't do this. I cannot root for this guy. Yes, it does matter in a fashion. So despite my not being a fan of no Green Bay fan could ever be a fan of the Eagles. And anyhow, so I was really pleased by the outcome, but I didn't watch. I tuned in every so often. What I saw was 40-6 at one point. I thought, oh, magnificent.
It was a blowout, and love to see the underdog win it. And that way, you know, Casey doesn't get the 3 in a row. So, you know, the Packers are still on top with the record.
And I did confess to my Kansas City friend, and yeah, he didn't hold it against me, given how much he despises the MAGA influence over particular members of his team.
And Philly, it is hard to root for Philly. I'll grant you that. So,
but you know that Trump hates Philadelphia.
Oh, really?
Yeah, didn't that come up sometime in this?
Well, I know Trump was rooting for it. Like, he called that Casey's going to win. Oh, so yeah, just another right thing he was wrong about.
And he made it clear that one of the reasons he really wanted that, he was really fond of them, was Mahomes' wife.
Oh, of course. Don't leave him alone. I'm just saying. Didn't we get Reggie White from the Eagles, though? You got to like the Eagles for that. Wasn't he?
Thank
you. Yeah, I mean, thank you, Eagles, for Reggie White.
I like the city of Philadelphia, though yeah, the fans apparently are outrageous.
Well, I mean, come on. You can't throw batteries at Santa Claus. You know, that's a bad thing. Yeah, they are a excited bunch. Let's put it that way. I did see some fires and looting a little bit yesterday in celebration, but you know, what are you going to do? You know, not like your team winning to go out and wreck stuff.
So it's okay when sports people do that.
Yeah, just not Black Lives Matter.
You got it.
Harvey K., Professor Emeritus of Democracy, University of Wisconsin, Green Bay. I'm sorry, go ahead, Harvey.
No, I just want to let Jess know that I appreciated her sarcastic.
Yeah, we do appreciate just sarcasm.
it's my native tongue.
Now served all day.
For the best 28
years. That's a good, you know what? That's good. I'm going to have to ask people. From now on, I'll say to them, just tell me, can you speak sarcasm?
Yeah, right, exactly. 855-752-4842. Caller, be patient. We will get to you. Harvey, some of the angst that I'm kind of getting a sense of is described best by a headline over at the New York Times right now. Judge rules the White House failed to comply with court order. The subheadline, the federal judge in Rhode Island said the Trump administration has failed to comply with his order, unfreezing billions of dollars in federal grants. Now, here's the meat of the issue. On Friday, 22 Democratic attorneys general went to Judge McConnell to accuse the White House of failing to comply with his earlier order. The Justice Department responded in a filing on Sunday that money for clean energy projects, as well as transportation infrastructure allocated to states by the Inflation Reduction Act and the Bipartisan Infrastructure Bill, was exempt from the initial order because it had been paused under a different memo than the one that prompted the lawsuit. The judge ruled on Monday, explicitly rejected the argument. His initial order, he wrote, it was his initial order, he said, was clear and unambiguous, and there are no impediments to the defendant's compliance with. The judge granted the attorney general's request for a motion for enforcement, essentially a nudge. It did not find the Trump administration was in contempt of court or specify any penalties for failing to comply. But I think ultimately the concern being with an administration that's more than willing in every circumstance to push the envelope of what is acceptable or not acceptable. I mean, what if the guy just all of a sudden doesn't listen to the federal judges, Harvey? I mean, what kind of constitutional crisis would we be in then?
We would be in the most dramatic constitutional crisis that I can remember since... Well, in essence, since the election of 2000, okay, where the Supreme Court stepped in to give the Republicans the presidency that year. I mean, we could go further back, but the most important thing to consider is this, that there are people in that administration and nearby who actually believe in a royal president. That is a president who is above the law, okay? Now, let me also say, I'm just thinking about this today. There are things today known as constitutional monarchies. Okay, England's got a constitution, you know, Britain's got a constitutional monarchy. Scandinavian countries have those things. But in all of those cases, the king is essentially a figurehead.
Ceremonial.
And there are duties, ceremonial. Now, if Trump would like to become a ceremonial monarch, okay, showing up at Super Bowl games and things like that, that might not be the worst, except then I corrected myself and I thought, oh, wait, then we get Vance, right? So, right. But to be more serious about it, it really is a really dangerous moment if a president actually turns his back on a decision of the courts. Now, his response, I believe, he's hoping that it'll go higher up. It'll make its way to the Supreme Court. And the Supreme Court, given its you know,
makeup.
What's the numbers? Yeah, it's makeup. Thank you. A good way of putting it. It's makeup that they'll somehow grant him this. But you know what? I'm not sure that they will. I'm not sure that the court would want to be told, would want to give away the authority of the courts.
Right.
At least let's put it this way. I would expect one and possibly two of the conservative justices to side with what would likely be liberal opposition. I mean, that's the thing. Okay. You know, there back in the 1930s, Franklin Roosevelt faced, he knew that he'd have trouble when they passed the National Industrial Recovery Act and the Agricultural Adjustment Act back in 33. These were not executive orders. These were legislatively approved.
Okay. Yes.
In the first 100 days.
Gotcha.
And in 1935, the court ruled that they were unconstitutional, particular elements in there. Now, Roosevelt's own response, he wasn't happy about it, but he did tell his cabinet and his aides, well, it was time to move on beyond that kind of legislation for us to develop new legislation. And the worry was, however, that thereafter, because the court was conservative, by the way, he is a progressive, he's a liberal.
Mm-hmm.
He proposed the expansion of the court. He proposed that he get to a point that they change the composition of the court, which, by the way, has happened before
yep.
in American history.
Should happen again. One man's opinion.
And Congress was not inclined to allow that. The American people might well have been inclined to allow that because they were because the court was standing in the way of very popular programs in many ways. But there was an irony He decided he pushed ahead in 1935 with the Social Security Act and the National Labor Relations Act. Now, we know that the kind of crisis we're in. He knew there was the danger that they might get to the court and be found unconstitutional. But when they did get to the court, there was a change, I think, because the justices could read, one particular justice could read popular opinion. There was a vote that switched. And then the irony became all more significant that in the next couple of years, FDR got to appoint almost an entire new court due to deaths and resignations and so on. And it became known as the Roosevelt Court, which didn't always approve all of his initiatives, legislative and otherwise. But unfortunately, we won't get to see that kind of thing because Trump is president for the next few years, apparently, supposedly. I mean, unless something bad happens. And I don't want that to happen. Let me make that clear, because I don't see Vance as an improvement on the current president. So anyhow, there are these kinds of moments arise. But right now, the question is, will Trump hold out for the Supreme Court, or will he walk away? I mean, so much of what he's about is, you know, we got to remember, a lot of what he's about is bluster.
Right, showman.
The point is that he's got to be checked. And fortunately, there are judges who are willing to check him. Now, am I satisfied with checking him in this instance? No, because there's no penalty so far. What happens next? Then the test is, if he continues to do that and it comes back to that courtroom, will the judge try to impose? I don't know what the penalty would be even, but that's when.
That's when the constitutional crisis happens. This judge in this case, Judge McConnell, in admonishing the Trump administration for not following through explicitly on his order, he said that the pauses in funding violate the plain text of the temporary restraining order that the earlier ruling ordered the administration to, quote, not to pause, freeze, impede, block, cancel, or terminate money that had already been allocated by Congress to the states to pay for Medicaid, school lunches, low-income housing subsidies, and other essential services.
And by the way, I think I might have sent you a note, you and Jess, but maybe I didn't. The Department of Agriculture is, you know, everyone thinks of USAID and the $20 billion that's being kept from American farmers as a consequence. But the Department of Agriculture has also postponed or cut programs, which will affect American farmers. As I said to someone, let's see where those signs for Trump out on the country roads go.
Right.
Or what additions might be added.
Folks are listening to the Dom Salvi Show. It's Harvey K., Professor Emeritus of Democracy. Come back with us, 855-752-4842. Your calls are next.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Welcome back to the Dom Salvi Show, 855-752-4842. Harvey K., Professor Emeritus of Democracy from the University of Wisconsin, Green Bay, joining me today. You folks can join us on the lines as well, 855-75-CIVIC. Before we get to the callers, Harvey, declining Trump thinks he took away Biden's security clearance that doesn't exist. You said, am I missing something here, Harvey? What? Donald Trump's trying to take everything away from everybody,
except himself.
Of course, more for him, Harvey. What's your sense of this administration, the president's efforts to, you know, take away clearances, valid or not, from his political adversaries?
Well, I mean, he's got a very vindictive personality, obviously. Okay, I don't think you want to cross him in this too readily. You know, that may well be, that's probably the scene in the New York State real estate market. And that's probably all the years that's exactly how we operated probably in the New York.
Oh, sure. Market. Yeah.
And, you know, it's really funny as a sidebar that I'll tell you. When I was a kid, I had a very close friend in the neighborhood I grew up in northern New Jersey. His name was Howard Lorber. Okay. And Howard Lorber, I later discovered watching one of these shows, Selling New York, you know, one of those things.
That reality real estate shows. Yeah.
Yeah, those kind of things. I didn't realize he was the head of like the biggest real estate firm. He became a billionaire. He's a head of the one of those, and a friend of Trump's. So I'm not sure that friendship was sustained. You know, I obviously lost my opportunity for the big bucks.
Yeah, well, he can always sell out sooner or later, Harvey. It's never too late. It's not selling out, it's buying in, right? 855-752-4842, 855-75-CIVIC. On here with Harvey K. Going to get us a couple of callers in here. Our buddy Tom from L.A., you are up. Happy Monday, Tom. Welcome. What do you got for us?
Well, first off, I'm a proud Franklin Delano Roosevelt Democrat, especially on the domestic policy. And I think we need to remember that we, the people, government, does not work when Republicans run it because they hate it and they want to destroy it and they want to put it in, bring it so low that it will fit in the bathtub.
They want government so small they can take it to the bathtub and drown it, I think was the phrasing that was used to be used. Yes.
Yeah. And Republicans are trying to get rid of FDR's New Deal. I remember years ago, I don't even know because I never watched the show or listened to the show, but that's what Rush Limbaugh had said, that the goal was to get rid of FDR's New Deal. And, you know, we need to ask every conservative when they call up what they think of Project 2025, because we're living it. And it's only, I mean, all you have to do is watch and see what they have planned. They're not hiding anything. And we just need to find out what these people think about the fact that all government, all we, the people government, the money we pay our taxes for is disappearing. And these guys are just using it for tax cuts for billionaires. And they just need to, I just don't understand why it is that people don't understand that they're just getting rid of Medicaid, getting rid of Medicare, getting rid of Social Security, getting rid of Obamacare, getting rid of these programs so basically then they can give a tax cut to Elon Musk and Widow Hendricks and John Menard and, you know, the Bradley Foundation.
Yeah.
So please, people, wake up and realize that money and politics is the problem. And please just start thinking and know that, you know, go back and read Jack and the Beanstalk, where they have the three magic beans and he was going to be able to fix it all and give you everything you want. That's basically what Trump is, and he is also the emperor that has no clothes.
Yeah, but those beans were magic, Tom. That's the thing about it. Harvey, your thoughts, sir?
Okay, well, I've always appreciated Tom, and I especially love him for his identification as an FDR Democrat. This has gone on. I've known him for some years now. Yes. In fact, but I do want to point out, and I think he's absolutely right about the Republicans, but I do want to point out that back in the 1990s, it was striking just how much a Democratic president was trying to get rid of the New Deal and succeeded in good part. Bill Clinton, let's remember, Bill Clinton in the 1990s as president signed into law an act, the Graham-Rudman Act, that brought an end to the Glass-Steagall Act. The Glass-Steagall Act was the law that was enacted early on in the Roosevelt presidency that separated investment banking and commercial banking because you wanted to make sure that people's deposits were not subject to the same kind of risk-taking, okay, that those investment bankers were ready to pursue. And Clinton signed into law the end of that law first. Now to get to even another big thing, which affected quite a few Wisconsinites as it across the country. By the way, it affected all of us when we ended up in 2007, 8, and 9, with the Great Recession, okay? The other one is he signed into law the end of what they called, in quotes, welfare as we know it, but it was aid to families with dependent children, which goes all the way back to the FDR years, where single-parent households would be accorded support by the government in order to enable them to raise their kids. It was also in some ways very much a part of the Social Security Act and you know, that kind of legislation. So yes, the Republicans are out to kill the last key elements, we might say, of not only the Great Society, not only the New Deal, but also the Great Society. And the shame was that when Clinton was signing that kind of thing into law, Americans should have turned out en masse to block it, and they didn't. And let us hope that if they try to pull that stunt this time, Americans will not leave it up to the Democrats in Congress to you know, get up and give speeches, you know, bewailing it.
Yeah, man, things were good under Bill Clinton, right? No wars, balanced budget, paying down the debt. People weren't necessarily involved. Medicaid provides health coverage to more than 72 million low-income Americans. If the Republicans are somehow successful in winding that down, I mean, it's not like 72 million low-income Americans all of a sudden don't have health issues or need access to health care. You know, there's still going to be a need. What happens then? What happens to 72 million low-income Americans if the Republicans are successful? Come back with us. Harvey Kaye, Professor Emeritus of Democracy from the University of Wisconsin-Green Bay. Your calls as well, 855-752-4842. Also, what about a class action lawsuit against the government? Or do we just have to have another election? Come back. We'll talk about it. The Dom Salvia Show, 855-752-4842, 855-75-CIVIC. Got Harvey Kaye hanging out with us today. Jess P.S. is on the board. You can join us as well, 855-75-CIVIC. Some breaking news on a topic we talked about in the last hour. According to Politico, a federal district court judge in Boston has temporarily blocked the Trump administration from reducing health research grants. However, this would have a $65 million impact this year on the University of Madison, same University of Minnesota, about another 50, 60 million. Same with what's the health out in Minnesota there as well?
Mayo Clinic.
Mayo Clinic. Thank you. Yeah. You know, you're talking hundreds of millions of dollars. A judge, Angel Kelly, issued a temporary restraining order barring the administration from imposing the cuts in the 22 states that earlier sued to block the reduction. So those are the red states. That's included. The blue states. Our state, Wisconsin, it was one of those 22. The cuts, according to Politico, which the administration imposed today, are still in effect in the other states. So the red states that are like wanting Donald Trump to do all these things apparently still have these cuts in effect in their states. But they are a temporary restraining order on the 22 states, including Wisconsin. Breaking news from Politico on the NIH grants. 855-752-4842. Harvey, he's Donald Trump on these executive orders is losing left and right. Now, these are at least, you know, temporary orders. They'll still have to go through the entire process, and then they got to go through God knows up to the Supreme Court. As mentioned, the makeup there, that's a crapshoot on what happens. But we talked a little bit earlier about the efforts of FDR when he came out and legislatively pushed some things that were passed that were ultimately found to be unconstitutional, as you mentioned. Is there any comparison to the efforts of FDR in the first 100 days legislatively as to what Trump is doing with executive orders today?
No.
could you explain why?
Well, okay. I mean, let's start on the level of humanity. How's
that? Okay.
Okay. In 1929, the United States entered into, and as did much of the world, but the United States especially entered into a vicious and horrible depression. Okay. I mean, really horrible. I mean, people, millions lost their jobs. People were out on the road trying to, you know, make a living by traveling and begging and whatever else was required. I mean, industries shut down. Banks were closing their doors. I mean, it was a nightmarish situation. And Herbert Hoover, who was well known as a humanitarian who had led the relief effort for Belgium after World War I, everyone expected that he would have, you know, an ounce of decency now that it was the United States that was in this kind of crisis. But he did very little, very little. And when FDR ran for president, he promised a New Deal. But it was a New Deal not only to get people back to work, it was also a New Deal that would empower them. It was also a New Deal that would address the needs of the American environment, the erosion that was taking place in rural areas, the drought that was striking the plain states, those kinds of things.
Yeah.
But when he became president, he didn't start issuing executive orders. He did have a majority in Congress, and there were many Republicans who were also, in quotes, liberal or progressive. And they legislated. They passed an unprecedented number of bills during that period of time that would provide work, provide relief, that would create, for example, the Civilian Conservation Corps. Okay. I mean, something which lives in the bright spots of American history.
Yeah.
That was going to, you know, create parks. It was going to provide young men for jobs, the whole routine. Okay. So, I mean, that's what they pursued. They pursued the empowerment and the enhancement of Americans and American life. What have we seen right now? We have seen a mad dash effort, number one, to release insurrectionists, and did pardon in many cases insurrectionists that they have tried with the use of a pen to freeze or bring an end to major programs that were enacted by Congress that the American people and by way of their institutions depend upon. I mean, I can only tell you that when people say to me, what do you make of all this? It's striking to me that the best way to describe it is this is a presidency that in the course of its first few weeks has set out not to transform, but to destroy what prevails in the United States. And to compare, FDR was trying to enable Americans to lift the country out of a depression with today's Trump administration. Okay. It's hard to do it other than to see, you know, the antithesis prevailing today, okay, compared to what FDR was about.
Yes. opposite sides of the equation, certainly. And note, these are executive orders being done and pushed out by this administration at a dizzying speed, purposefully. And one of the reasons, I think, Harvey, is they don't have, as much as they claim this mandate in Congress, you know what I mean? They can't even get their own ducks in a row. Come middle of March, literally like 4 weeks from now, where funding's going to run out. You know, what are Republicans going to do there? In the end of April, the 2023 Fiscal Responsibility Act, we don't have the 12 appropriation bills set. We have a 1% across the board cut. That's how the bill's set. That's how the law is right now. So the Republicans have a lot on their plate, and they don't have the unity. They may say they're right. Unified, but they're not. Yeah, and certainly not. And if you throw in, you know, a debt ceiling fight on this as well, reconciliation is going to get real ugly. I'm not convinced that this Republican Congress can get anything done. So I'm concerned. Yeah. We're looking at a shutdown one way or another, and certainly the Democrats could come potentially to save the day, but there's got to be some give and take. And if you don't have willing partners on the other side, how can you possibly believe anything that the Trump administration says if they're going to go against, you know, established law and already a budget and funding that Congress has approved and the president has signed that he's trying to impound?
Yeah, and if I'm not mistaken, I read today that the Republican Senate, the Senate Republicans, and let's not forget, they're the majority over there,
yep,
have a budget resolution which does not include the $1 trillion tax cut being sustained, okay?
Mm.
Whereas the ones that the folks in the House, you know, the MAGA types in the House and others, they're eager to provide tax cuts, which, by the way, is really kind of striking because, and even there's division clearly,
yeah,
even
right
in the House.
Mm-hmm.
It is striking. I mean, I don't know how much more stupid they can be than to pursue that direction, given that Americans at some point are going to wake up that they've been robbed repeatedly by the Republicans. In fact, I've even thought to myself, I know it sounds outrageous or silly, I've even wondered if this mad dash by Trump to issue all these executive orders wasn't just a way of covering to give some time for the Republicans in the Congress to get their acts together, right? Yeah. And Musk becomes, you know, merely a decoy for things.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. I think there's a lot of that going on. But I, again, at some point, you know, the rubber meets the road. At some point, the red states, the MAGAs, are going to realize, oh my God, you know, some of this funding that they're cutting is something that I rely on, or it's the VA doctors, you know, it's the university research that helps out on the cancer stuff, and you know, someone that you love might be impacted by that. And ultimately, as we move forward and more of these things are done, and you see the raw numbers of what we're talking about, 70 some million people on Medicaid, man, I guarantee you, Harvey, there's going to be some Republicans in that list.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, I am thrilled to see these Democratic state attorneys general responding to this stuff.
Yeah.
I will tell you, I don't know if I ever mentioned this. I've never mentioned probably on air. My daughter is higher than an assistant attorney general in the state of New York.
Oh, nice.
And she runs a particular section having to do with workers' rights and labor. And she was recruited to the attorney general's office back when Trump first became president, to be part of a team to fight the Trump initiatives that might affect New York State citizens. And she spent her year doing every kind of law imaginable. And then ultimately, when that administration came to an end, she was offered to stay on. And what did she want to do? And she took on the workers' rights and that kind of thing.
Yeah, the K's is doing the good work out there. Harvey K, Professor Emeritus of Democracy, joining me today. Just PS is on the board. We've got some callers and some texters. Let's get to Gary from Sussex, our pal Gary. Hey, man, welcome to the show. What do you got for us today?
Well, I don't know if I'm your pal anymore. You had me on hold for an hour and
4 minutes. Oh, man, you keep complaining about it. You're going back on hold, man. Got it. Go ahead, man.
Yeah, well, we're gonna have to talk to Jess about that.
You know, it's all me, man. I take full responsibility for making you wait.
Yeah, I know.
Make the wait worth it, man. I'll cut you off again. Go ahead. What do you got?
Okay. Hey, look, we all knew Donald Trump is not a liar. He said he was going to be a dictator on day one, and he became a dictator.
And you voted for that.
He went out. Of course.
You like dictators, huh?
He also said... He lied about this. He said 2025 is not part of his administration, and it is. We all know that now.
Oh, but okay. Did you know it then, or did you not vote? Did you think you were not voting for that then?
I thought you guys were lying about it. I thought you guys are nuts. You guys are trying to destroy him. But you know what? It's coming to fruition. Okay.
Okay. And do you support 2025? I just want to be clear here, Gary. Are you supportive of that effort? Like when you voted for Trump?
A lot of it, not all of it.
Okay, okay.
And another thing is I want to ask Harvey, do you want Donald Trump to fail?
Absolutely.
Okay, if he fails, that means America fails.
Let me explain. I absolutely do. I want the courts to block his initiatives. I want Republicans to remain divided. I want the Democrats to finally get their act together. I am not an enthusiastic Democrat. I believe in small d democracy. And I also believe very much that the only way that you can actually save democracy right now is to radically transform it in a progressive way. Yes, national health care. Yes, free public higher education. Yes, all the things that obviously you don't want. Those are the things that I believe will save democracy. And you know what? Despite Trump's victory, the majority of Americans would have voted for Bernie the first time and the second time, and Trump would never have been elected because those are exactly the things that most Americans want.
Gary, your thoughts.
The thing is,
go ahead.
I did not vote for I did not vote for Barack Obama. I didn't vote for Bill Clinton, but I wanted both of those guys to succeed.
So when you say, when you say succeed though, Gary, we got to talk about definitions. You want him to succeed in, for example, using an executive order to take away national birthright citizenship. Is that I'm against that. So what are we talking about? So far, the courts have ruled almost unanimously against him on these executive orders, right? So the courts are saying no, at least initially. So are they against him, or are they just ruling on the basis of what the law is and what Donald Trump is trying to do? If Donald Trump is trying to circumvent the Constitution, Donald Trump's trying to break existing law, be it the Empowerment Act or the laws requiring the NIH to have specific circumstances on the way they spend their money and what they can do to change that. If he's breaking the law and doing those things, yes, I want him to fail in those efforts, Gary. That doesn't make me unpatriotic, man.
No, but the fact is, if he wins and he succeeds, that means we all win.
But now, based on what? What are you talking about?
Sorry.
Come on.
You're talking to the unconverted.
Certainly, and I appreciate that, Gary. But we all win. If Donald Trump wins, we all win. Based on what action? Well, I mean, I'm really curious to know. And I have not heard yet, Harvey. The Republicans define for me what success looks like. Is it the stock market? Is it inflation? Is it GDP? Is it unemployment? You know, is it deportations?
I didn't hear Gary answer your question. Is he for the end of birthright citizenship? Because I will tell you, if that is true, vast generations of us who are citizens will discover that we may not be citizens because we depended upon the fact that when people came over from Germany, from Eastern Europe, from Italy, from all these places, they didn't get citizenship.
Folks are listening to
the
Dom.
As a consequence, their kids became citizens only because they were born here.
Come back with us. Tell us something good. 855-752-4842.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Hello tomorrow and goodbye to yesterday. We've been waiting for this moment and we still don't know what to say. We may never find the answers or know the reason why we both decided we should say goodbye.
And welcome back to the Dom Salvia Show, 855-752-4842, 855-75-CIVIC, our last segment of the day. If you got something to say, hit us up right now. But you know the rules, end of the day, you got to tell us something good. You got to hear something good. We'll take your calls. We'll talk your topics. But you got to start out with something good. Jess, you got anything you want to share?
I do, actually.
Oh, please do.
Okay, so I teach on Sundays at my local synagogue. And yesterday, I had a fantastic class. I teach seventh graders, so they have a tendency to be sullen and a little stinky and to hate the world and themselves and me. And we had a great class. We were talking and doing a text study of a section of Torah that's really, really hard. It's, if you're familiar with it at all, the Binding of Isaac. It's this chapter of Torah where God tells Abraham to sacrifice his son. And Abraham's just like, okay, just goes. And so we're studying this with seventh graders, and I got just such a rich conversation from them, and we'll actually be continuing it this next week. But it was just, it was great. It was fulfilling. It was good.
Engaged with the kids.
Yeah.
So what? I'll stop. I love the positivity. You know, I got thoughts in my head. I'm gonna keep on going. Thank you for sharing. I'm glad that the class was engaged.
Yes.
When God tells people to murder the children, sometimes they get engaged. I'm just saying. Mm-hmm. That'd be something you want to know about.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you for that. Mm-hmm. Jess, Harvey, you got anything you want to share, man?
Well, as I told the two of you, later this week, and well, on Wednesday, in fact, we're flying down to Florida, to Sarasota, Florida, which we've been doing for almost 20 years, because I'm sort of an advisor, although there are actually quite a few of them are older than me. There's a veterans group in Sarasota, Florida Veterans for Common Sense, a progressive veterans group made up originally of World War II and Vietnam, and now, of course, Afghanistan, Iraq veterans, and otherwise where anyone has served. And I was called because they named their group Florida Veterans for Common Sense in honor of Thomas Paine's revolutionary pamphlet, Common Sense, And they had only done so, you know, not long before they saw me on TV talking about Thomas Paine. And they called me and they said, would you come down to speak? And I said, sure. And they said, how much money do you want? And I said, how much money have you got? And they told me that they had asked some retired general to speak, and he asked for too much. I said, look, just give me the expenses for me and my wife to come down, because Thomas Paine's birthday is January 29th. So to escape Wisconsin midwinter. Well, ever since, every year, instead of the original lecture format, we now do a Thomas Paine's birthday party when they can arrange it in the right venue. Get about 150 people to turn out for this.
Wow, that's awesome.
So, and they called last week to me. They said, Harvey, we know you're coming down. Would you give the Thomas Paine toast on this event? We're not asking you to do any major talk. Just do the Thomas Paine toast. And I said, how long have I got? And they said, 3 minutes. No, I got 10 minutes or I ain't going to give it. So I got 10 minutes for what it's worth. Thomas Paine.
Excellent, Harvey. A 10-minute toast. I mean, there's worse places to go and celebrate Thomas Paine's birthday than Sarasota, Florida. That Siesta Key beach is lovely, man. That sand
that's
is like
where we're staying on Siesta Key.
Yeah, that talcum powder sand, man. It never gets warm. It is amazing. Thank you for sharing, Harvey. Good luck on that. All right, so I just got to set a real quick one. You folks know I like to go down to Brady Street in Milwaukee.
My indeed.
Favorite streets. And my favorite bar on Brady Street is the Roman Coin. Mm-hmm. And I go there. And Terry, it was her dad's bar for a long time. And she's now had it. This bar's been there for probably 60 years. And it's a beautiful, beautiful old building. It's a Pabst Tide House. It used to be tied to the brewery. And there's some little bowling lanes in the basement. I mean, that kind of old school.
Wow.
Anyway, so it's been around a long time, and it's a cash only kind of bar, right? And so they don't serve any food because they don't have to. They've been around that long, and as such, it's a dog bar, man. People, you know, the neighbors, everyone comes around, brings their dog in there. Like dogs will literally like walk down the street and like go in there because they're so used to it. And I love dogs. I mean, I used to bartend there. I love the dogs. I remember the mm-hmm. dogs more than the people. You know, I loved it. And I was in there on a Friday night. And having a drink with my wife, and there's a group over in the corner, and I saw this little animal. What is that? It was a 3-month-old Burmese Mountain Dog puppy. It was just the cutest, softest, most awesome little thing. And I went over, and you never know how the dogs are gonna be. I'm usually dog friendly, and she was kind of shy with somebody else before I got there, and she came up to me and wagging that little tail, and I mean, it looked like this little teddy bear. It was just the most amazing, cute little dog. I love the dogs, man. So
can I just ask, what's the name of the bar you mentioned?
The Roman Coin on Brady Street.
The Roman.
Yeah, the Roman Coin. 855-752-4842. Jim from Kenosha, you'll have the last word today, but you got to start out telling us something good, Jim. What do you got?
I didn't have to shovel the snow today.
Yeah, that's a good thing, man. Give yourself a couple of days. It might be here.
2 days.
Yeah, yeah.
It's gonna be a different story.
All right, cool. What do you got for us?
Is Harvey still there?
He is. Yep, absolutely.
Questions for Harvey.
Yep.
All right.
Go ahead.
Harvey, I was just, I read an article about a guy comparing Elon Musk that nobody's ever happened like him before, except for there was a mention of a guy in the Wilson administration. But then I got to thinking, what about Ben Franklin? Was he ever elected for anything, or was he just always appointed?
Oh, good question. Harvey, what do you think? We got like 45 seconds, Harvey. Go ahead.
I guess he was chosen to be at the convention for the Declaration and the convention for the Constitution. So I guess he would have been chosen at least by some of the folks in Philadelphia. Whether it was an open and democratic election is not likely, but whatever the groups that were being represented, which would have been white males, I guess he was elected, but that was as to be a delegate. That's the key thing. Not to hold public office, but to be a delegate. To my knowledge, that's it.
Harvey K., Professor Emeritus of Democracy from the University of Wisconsin-Green Bay. Thank you so much, Harvey. We'll talk very soon. Just PS, thank you for all that you do. Folks, now stick around. Nightlight with Pete Schwab is coming up next. Have a great night.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.